Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm getting an echo here. Okay. My apologies. Okay, so we welcome you to the show. This is with Dr. Michael Rice, and I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. Today is Friday, November the 21st, 2014. It's actually Aramaic Friday, so we also have Dale Hoffman with us. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. So welcome, Dale, to the show. Michael will be with us here in just 1 second. He's going into the other room. So how are you today, Dale?
I'm doing great. I'm in Chicago. Well, I'm on the edge of Chicago, about ready to go into the city.
I bet you got snow up there.
Yeah, well, Chicago, I guess, wasn't too bad. I was in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and then Lansing with Rex and Mitzi, and it was just, yeah, Kalamazoo got at least a foot, and it was just coming, and it would come gangbusters, and it would go away, and it would come blowing intense and heavy, and then it would go away. I never knew what the weather was going to turn into, because it kept coming and going and shifting and changing so much. But we made it through, and we had a great event last night at Unity of Greater Lansing, and people were still talking about the different people from town were still talking about Michael, and I mean, yeah, it was an amazing night.
Awesome.
Very cool. So tell us about your event last night.
It's called Realization of the Christ Within, and what it was is about, it's probably the most, probably one of the deepest ones. I'm sure it is one of the deepest ones that I do, but sorry, my CD player in my car is clicking right now. It clicks every once in a while. I don't know if it's picking up on the phone, but sitting in my car. But yeah, what it is it's really about, that natural conscious, active, present love nature, you know, our true being, and how we build these veils, these masks, you know, the hypocrite, which is that word translated, ape, that's translated in Aramaic, in modern English, usually to hypocrite, but these veils, these masks, and how we begin to live sort of between the two. And, of course, that mask, the ape, the veil, it's not actually real. It's kind of like looking into a mirror. When you look into the mirror, what is observing what's in the mirror is not separate from what's in the mirror, yet what's in the mirror is not actually real. It's just a reflection. And we start to live, of course, between that sort of, like Michael would say, the non-being self, and that true being state. And the more we try to deny, repress, suppress that mask, that unconscious aspect, the veil, the more it, that's when we start suffering. And then the more we start experiencing that sort of fire, the intensity that we have in life. And, you know, last night was about getting into the recognition of that and learning to use the breath, breathing, feeling, letting it pass, and being able to burn through those veils that we create for ourselves. And Christos actually means open channel of divinity, if you look in Strong's Greek concordance, or channel of God. And, you know, I liken it in the Yeshua teachings. He kept saying, I am the light of the world, and not him, Jesus, but meaning, you know, that open presence, the eye within the eye. and another one was I am the gate, which is the same word as doorway. The veil of, in the doorway of the temple was rent in twain. Of course, the body temple, not a physical building. And that open space, the portal, what I talked about was getting into that open space. And when we put veils in there, anything that we put in that open door, it's going to ultimately have to burn away when the temple gets to that point of what I call the pinnacle of the temple. It's an old Gnostic idiom talking about when we get into those states when we're really firing on all cylinders, you could say, and we're having like a really wide open energetic experience, whether we want to label it positive or negative, that's it's going to be the realization that we've got to burn off those bushel baskets before we can sort of step into that higher level of vibration. But we so often sort of pull the plug out of the wall when that starts happening because it doesn't feel good in a lot of cases. And that's basically what last night was about, was that realization that Christ is not some outside person walking around in any way. It's us when we're open. It's when we're in the open door, the open space, the portal, the gate. And, you know, that state of being, that's the Rachma, which is that shining force that comes from that open door, the open space. And, man, did we mangle that one. It's always outside. It's a guy outside. And it's a church building. And, you know, the pinnacle of the temple is climbing to the top of a tower. And without having that deeper realization of that, all it is just concepts in the head, just like the masks are. So it was pretty amazing. It was an amazingly open, courageous group of souls there. Even when the snow was really coming down pretty good, we had a really good turnout. It was great.
Awesome. Well, it's interesting that when people really get experientially that's possible or get the slightest taste of it, of course, everybody wants to live there totally yesterday. And, you know, there's a statement that Yeshua makes of you can't storm the gates of the kingdom. You want to talk about that from the Aramaic and how that ties in with the whole thing? Because a lot of people, you know, the game is, I don't want to do my work. I just want to be there. And so maybe you could address that a little bit from the Aramaic perspective.
You know what's really amazing is just that how bad that word kingdom has just been, mangled. In so many ways, in terms of people simply not even really knowing what that means, a lot of the people that would, you know, sort of go around in the name of what they think of as Christ today. And kingdom is such an interesting word because we really don't know which language that the word in Aramaic is Malkutah. And storming the gates of the kingdom is such an interesting way to look at it because today, like as an example, in modern Aramaic, Assyrian Aramaic, if you look at that, the mulk sound, which is at the beginning of kingdom, is just translated simply as the word king. Now, it's an interesting word because the ta at the end actually genders the word feminine. And what the feminine aspect means is that the kingdom would be a state of being, a perception, a direct spiritual experience, rather than a physical location. It's not something that you can step into. It's not something that you can, like as an example, when Yeshua would say, if someone says to you that the kingdom is here or there, beware, because it's not in some sort of location within what we know of as the world. It's actually a direct state of being. He also said to Pontius Pilate, Pilate says, you know, where's this supposed place that you're a king of, almost mockingly, and Yeshua's reply was that my Malku is not of a place that you can see. If it was something in this world, my handlers would have whisked me away so that you could do me no harm. But actually, the kingdom that I speak of, the kingdom that I have stewardship of, is actually a direct state of being that's not located anywhere that you can see in time and space. And that direct state of being can only happen in the present moment. It's in that rachma, it's in that open flow. Now, the mulk sound is an interesting sound that's now just translated as king because it goes back as far as we know, all the way back to, it goes back to Phoenician, Akkadian. And what that word originally meant wasn't king as in a worldly king. What it actually meant was one who walks between the worlds, or one who is essentially in this world, though not of it, is a good way to put that. That we are someone who's able to be in this world and they see through the masks, they see through the veils of it, and they can be conscious in this world, realizing that it's basically a dream. It's an echo of the truth. It's simply a reflection of the true light or the true being. And it's really beautiful because in the Gospel of Yohanan and John, Yeshua said that I am the gate, the eye within the eye, not me, Jesus, but Ina, Anana, the eye within the eye, the true eye, the witness within the witness, the light within the light, is the open gate, the open door, the tareya, the doorway. And he says that when you realize this, you go in and you out, and you find or realize pasture. I'll say pasture from the King James. When we think pasture, we think of a big, you know, green field where there's sheep eating, because we're always thinking sheep, sheep, sheep. And what that actually, the word in Aramaic is onepuk, and what it really means is a fertile field, a field of fertility. And that's not necessarily just meaning a physical field that you walk on that's got nice green grass, but rather that you realize that when you realize there's a door, that open door, and when you're in the openness of that, in that space of Rachma, you're able to see through this field that we create that we call the world, almost like a matrix, you could say, in a modern sense. We're able to see through the veils of that. We're able to see it as simply the projection of within. It's all that projection that's inside. It's not no kind of an outside process. It's that projection within, through our mind's eye, through the pictures that we create in our own awareness, and that's what we actually see that appears to be outside of us. And when we realize that in that open door, in that open gate, we can go in and out, and where there's times when we may feel conscious and times when we may feel unconscious. But the people that were coming completely from the door within the door, the gate within the gate, the eye within the eye, and seeing through this world, that was, those were the ones that are in Malkuta, which is that kingdom. And it's so beautiful also that when the disciples said to him, why do you always speak in parables? And he said, well, to you it's given to realize what this kingdom means, but to those outside, everything is in parable. And I don't feel that that meant those outside the house that they were in, if they were in a house, or those outside the discipleship. What he was basically saying, I really see in Aramaic, is he's saying to those that aren't coming from the open kingdom, that aren't coming from that non-dual state of being, everything is coded, everything is a parable, everything is a matrix that they don't see for what it is. They simply see the code, or what it codes itself as, from their own unconscious or subconscious, rather than the reality of what's actually there, which is that energy system. And when you're open in the space of the kingdom, that can only happen in the present moment. It doesn't happen in the past. It's like looking into the past and saying, oh my God, I should have done this, I should have done that, and looking back, or having some kind of a fear for the future, like, oh, I'm going to have to do this or do that. If I don't do that, then this is going to happen and that's going to happen. No, sufficient unto the present moment, unto the almana, are the evils or the unripe aspects thereof, the veils and the bushel baskets. And if we just realize that all life happens now, it happens completely in the present moment, which is an idea that was completely lost in the Jesus teachings. Going into Greek, that was gone. It was gone. By the time it got to Latin, forget it, it was already completely gone. And to realize that so much that he was saying was really about right now. It wasn't about a future time or a day or some sort of end of the world in the future. It was about the end of that coded parable that we call the world, that matrix that we don't realize that we're actually creating, or I should say manifesting in our own awareness. And when we can see through that mask of that, that's when we realize that, you know what, we are in the kingdom rather than lost in the world. We're in this world and not of it. It's so much more profound than what we've gone for 2,000 years speaking of the Jesus teachings with. And that was an intentional thing under Saint Irenaeus. Saint Irenaeus, I say that with a tongue in cheek, in the late 2nd century, he literally, and he was very open about it in his writings, saying, look, we've got to take this away from personal, experiential, Gnostic stuff, anything that has to do with direct realization. This has to be established through a church that we create and through the text that we approve, so that people have to get it through us, because we're the ones that know their best good. They don't know their own good. So we're going to have to create a structure of that, of course, economy, politics, and religion under one umbrella that a couple hundred years birthed the Roman Catholic Church at the Council of Nicaea. But people do have actually the ability to be able to see consciously if they're given the tools to be able to see through the layers of the world. And other than your work or what I'm out there doing, or there's a few people, there's not a lot of people that are really, I will say Eckhart Tolle does a great job in his way of really putting that the presence of the moment in into words. It's pretty amazing that now we are starting to have teachers that are popping up and are sort of helping us expose that for what it is, which is just what Yogananda called a, you know, to have ourselves as the ever joyous witness of a stupendous cosmic drama. So, yeah, it's amazing. I'm honored to be a part of that. My daughter was sitting in the car and she started coughing and then got out of the car, so there was some clunking going on. But
well, it's interesting as you talk about that and that going in and out and how people get a taste of it, but because they go back to their old ways, their old world, their old carbon-based memory, they lose that taste of it. And when Yeshua was talking to the disciples, he's saying, you know, you guys are in it right now. You're getting a taste. So you're getting it directly. You're getting to understand what it means. But then you look at only one of them when the stress was up and chips were down, that is during the crucifixion experience, were able to maintain it, able to maintain that awareness. All 11 of the others lost it, left, ran away, denying him, one of them even cursing him. And so, you know, to recognize that we can move into that awareness, into that state, and then when the stress is up and the chips are down, the tendency is to lose it. And to me, that's the inspiration that keeps us doing our work. And then if you look at the writings of John, the one who did stay, you notice that of all the writings, his are the most focused on the state of living as love, as a human being. And the others, having run away, weren't able to keep in tune with what had opened in them and be able to write directly, and that's because of that, of course, that fear-based mind that needs to be overcome. And that overcoming is a process, and that's where the work is, which many people don't want to engage in, don't want to do.
Mm. Yeah, and when we're living, of course, from that concept of religion as some sort of religion can become the very, in the words of Albert LaChance, you know, those ideologies of religion and the belief system, the BS boils down and hardens to become a barrier, a veil, a bushel basket to prevent the transmission, the open space of love. That was the whole point of why it was supposedly created in the first place. And then when we believe our sort of modern idea of Christianity, whatever version we want to choose, and then, of course, don't realize that we're actually having some kind of semi-conscious relationship with a concept in our mind, that projection in our mind from the framework of what we think about the Jesus teachings rather than actually putting them into practice. And unfortunately, you can't put them into practice unless you really see them in that original Aramaic, because it doesn't translate almost at all in any other language. It just doesn't work. It's apples and oranges. You can't bring it through. And then when you remove that 2,000 years, it's like, forget it. And you go through the Council of Nicaea, and you go through Irenaeus, and guys like Pope Innocent III, who said that anyone who had an ideology that went against the predetermined thought system of the church should be burned alive in fire without mercy. Pope Innocent III. So when you've got lovely fellows like that shading all of this and shading it and boiling it down into what they want and boiling it down and boiling it down, 2,000 years later, you've got this heavy rock stone that people are throwing at each other at high-intensity speeds, using it like weapons instead of actually putting it into practice, because they don't even know what it means to put it into practice because they've never actually heard the teaching. And, you know, that's what keeps me moving forward, is to let people know, look, I said it last night before I started, the best thing you can do right now, number one, is to let go of trying to understand everything I'm saying, kind of like you would say in Why Again. You're like, a lot of information is going to be coming through fast. So rather than trying to, you know, keep up with this and scribbling down all kinds of notes, just be open in the moment, I'm saying. And it's basically, I spent most of the time, the first half yesterday, just the way Rex and I were talking about it, like I sort of walked all around this eggshell of modern Christianity, and I looked at it from a thousand angles and was just simultaneously poking holes in it from all these different directions until by the end the whole thing just shatters and people are almost looking at me going like, what the hell can I actually believe? Because you shattered, you know, pretty much anything that I was holding. And I'm like, it's not about believing, it's about being and living and realizing it'll never be in the concept of the structure of the religion or the ideology or the belief system. It's actually about being able to see through those codes and those matrixes, those matrices, I think is the word, and realize that you already are what you are looking for. You already are that space of love. And it's not about adding something on. It's about taking away. I use an analogy of a tuning fork or like a chime. And I was like, if we've got two chimes and one's vibrating slightly faster than the other, how do you actually, what's the easiest way to raise the vibration of the one that's wobbling a little slower? And I said, it's not about adding something on, it's about shaving off. It's what we take out of the system. It's what we take out of the temple that's not real. That's what slows it down. It's removing the bushel baskets from the light, which is in so many ways the opposite of what we turn it into, which is like learn more and sort of pick up more concepts and pick up these hardened down, boiled down, fence-like ideologies, and then the door is no longer open because we've got so many veils of belief over there that people don't even feel Christ anymore. They don't feel the open channel. They look outside for that. And then, of course, as soon as you look outside for the answer, the key, whatever it is that's supposedly going to solve the empty feeling in your life rather than realizing that that's something coming from within, as soon as you look outside for the key, you acknowledge that you don't have a key. And, of course, that will instantaneously reflect that lack back to you. And then we get caught, and then we start calling ourselves a victim. And then you've got the victim, the perpetrator, and the accuser, and just what I can't remember what the three are, but it's just an amazing thing when we realize that if you're lost in that world, everything's got to be in parable, because otherwise he couldn't have communicated to these people if he wasn't using parables like that, because they wouldn't have heard what he said anyway. So he just boiled it down to stories that a six-year-old could understand, whether they actually make sense cognitively or not. At least that'll translate to people who are completely asleep, at least on some level, though they may not get the full magnitude of it. So, yeah.
Well, and of course, we've only got words for what's in common experience, and unfortunately, the direct physiological experience of the love of God, which is what we're designed to experience, is not in common experience. Most people are functioning out of their hostility and fear, and so of course it can't be said in words, but fortunately we can, if we understand the words correctly, find the instructions, which if we follow them will take us to the experience. Then we'll start to develop a language about the experience, but until then the words are just, you know, they're so hollow because the experience isn't there to back them up, and most people want to get the experience from the words rather than from the doing of the work.
Mm.
So it's just an interesting conundrum that most people are stuck in because they think belief is the key as opposed to, as you say, being living. So it's an interesting process to go through with folks and to watch the awakening and the going back to sleep.
I was just going to say, until someone shares, like with you, until I heard, you know, my first experience with Y again down in Clearwater, Florida, like 20 years ago, I on some level, maybe I sensed certain things, but I'd never heard or seen it so clear. And it's like that, again, you know, that's what keeps me going. And I know it's what keeps you going because, you know, I would still be asleep if I didn't have that experience. If I just had like standard sort of new agey, you know, spirituality, I definitely wouldn't be where I am now, and that's what keeps me going, is knowing that even if it's just one person and just hearing that back and hearing people say, wow, I was right in the middle of it. It was right there in front of my nose, but I never saw the true nature, and I never realized it was something I was doing to myself. And that's always going to continue to, you know, be that love, that light, that essence that drives me forward. Knowing that, you know, it's not some future moment, but it's me being open in the presence of this moment and anyone that I encounter, whether it's in a class or just someone, you know, at a Walmart or something, that it's never about something outside. It's about me being in the open space and demonstrating that for others. And Yeah, a lot of people, you know, when I was asleep, I didn't know I was asleep, and that's what it meant to be asleep, so.
That's it, exactly. Well, let's check in with Dr. Tim. I think he's with us, and see what he's got to say. He's got to share with us today.
I am with you. I'm driving, and we had our group last night, and as you recommended, we watched the first part of Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, because it feeds so well into the three-hour lecture by Ian about learning to tune into something other than just the physical, learning to create a sense of purpose in your life or for your life other than just what the culture would drive you to. So we did that, and we helped the participants start crafting their secondary purpose. And because it was a small group, I shared with them some of, Dale was just talking earlier about how other people are starting to get this, and other teachers are emerging. And there's a younger version of Dr. Michael Rice with black skin. His name is Prince, E-A. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's capital E, small a. Some people might have seen some of his spoken word pieces. But so I played one of those for the group, and then I played a compilation of snippets from Russell Brand. If you haven't tuned into that, you can go to YouTube and type in Russell Brand, B-R-A-N-D, Consciousness Awakening. And there's a nicely edited piece of video from him. And these are just two examples of people who are starting to talk about love, about consciousness, about awakening, about starting with looking inside yourself rather than blaming others. And so we had a wonderful, wonderful session last night. And again, I had three people call and say they weren't going to make it, but they had planned on it. So we ended up having two people plus me in the group. And once again, so those smaller groups sometimes provide some of the deepest, most connected interactions. So it was lovely. And I just wanted to say, check out Michael and Dale, if you haven't, those two videos. And just to my mind and my ear, it's more of we're reaching critical mass. These things are coming out. These truths are being experienced and talked about by younger and younger people as we move on.
I love the Russell video. I've shared it with a lot of people, and I'll also recommend his new book came out about 5 weeks ago, Revolution. And in the middle of the word revolution, it says love backwards. It's a great book. It's a very fast book, but it's basically him stream of consciousness, basically the whole book. It's him stream of consciousness, like exposing the world, cracking the shell of the mask of the world, and talking about, you know, the real truth, the love, the light, the consciousness that's beneath it. I love Russell in interviews because he is so wide open that the interviewers usually don't even have a clue what he's even saying because he comes through so wide open. And I get so entertained by that because you'll see interviewers just throw their hands up and go, I don't know where to even fit in here. And I love it because it's just, and he says it, he's like, you know what, I was a part of that system that created, that's sort of perpetuating and continuing a lot of this to go forward. He's like, what I've seen through it now, I'm waking up. And it is, it's awesome, it's inspiring. And the little compilation video, it's like 10 minutes, with the little classical music soundtrack, it's pretty amazing to watch. Yeah, I don't know how many times I've watched it, probably a dozen times.
Yeah, I think that's the best description is he drops into being wide open. And he speaks so fast, so rapidly, that It's hard to keep up with him when I'm watching one of his unedited interviews, and that's why I really like that edited piece that you can find if you look on YouTube for Consciousness Awakening.
Yeah.
I think they do a nice job of taking sound bites and putting them together in a coherent way.
I've got a friend, my friend Danielle was at the snippets from Guyan Television with Daniel Pinchbeck. My friend Danielle was in the audience for that. And she said afterward, Russell, literally, she stood up at the end of the interview and Daniel just completely basically lost control. He just couldn't keep up. And he just throws the pen down on the desk at one point and goes, whatever. And it's funny because Danielle said he walked off of the stage, walked straight to her, and he cradled her face in his hands and he said, "Who are you?" And he just looked right. She's like, it pierced like right into her soul. And he kissed her on the forehead and he walked out of the room. So she said it was an experience she'll remember for a long time. Pretty neat.
Yeah. And then Dale, you said the phrase waking up. And so it reminds me of a song Peter Mayer has, Mayer. And it's Waking Up. It's from the American Dream. And his lyrics are so wonderful in so many ways, but I would encourage people to look on Peter Mayer's site for the American Dream song, and it's all about waking up from the American Dream. It's all about what Russell Brand says has happened to him. He was part of this craziness of accumulation and mass media and trying to get well known and drug, sex, and rock and roll, and he woke up. And
yeah,
Peter Mayer has a song with wonderful lyrics about that.
Yeah, I've heard people have mentioned the Peter Mayer thing to me before, but I haven't heard it yet. So, and Russell's had a bizarre life. Russell's father had Russell doing things when he was 12 years old that, you know, 12-year-olds might not be the best thing for them to be doing. He had a really bizarre upbringing. And he actually says that how he's actually got such immense gratitude for the bizarre experience of his upbringing, because it helped him be more outside of the box later in life and be able to see through the veils that he sort of went towards the world and he went towards the big dream, you know, meaning the American dream or the European dream, whatever. And he said because he had such a sort of disjointed childhood, when he got into the dream, he started to realize the absurdity of it. And he started practicing yoga and transcendental meditation. And he started realizing, hey, wait a second, I'm falling asleep all of a sudden. And he snapped out of it. And what a courageous thing to do, to speak out like he is. So, and there's more popping up. I mean, it's all over the internet, you know, for YouTube, things popping up on Facebook. It's like, wow, it's just popping up like corks on a lake right now. People are waking up.
A little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And it's certainly time. So thank you for sharing those pieces of information, Tim. I'll check them out. And it's definitely it's coming in so many circles. I know as we travel now, even the smallest town has its alternative healing center, and you know, things are just shifting and changing everywhere. It's just absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. So it's certainly a fun ride to be on the wave.
Agreed, and I'm not sure I said it, but the video for Prince E, the one titled "Why It's the World to End," doesn't focus.
You're breaking up, Tim.
Okay, driving. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you, but when you were talking a while ago, about every other word was dropping out.
Okay, this is just that Prince E's spoken word piece, the one that I showed last night, was about how it's time for the world to end, or something to that effect. So if you search for it on YouTube, it's a good one to get.
And I'm going to let it be the world of insanity. Time for that one to end, the insane world between our ears that we've been brainwashed with. And that's the whole purpose of the forgiveness process, is to put an end to that world for sure.
Yeah, so I'll just go on mute and listen.
All right, sir, we appreciate you. Blessings. So, Jeannie, anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up for us to say hello to?
Well, some of the conversation in the chat room around Russell Brand, he actually has really been in the limelight this week. He was on the late night show with Seth Meyers yesterday, and earlier in the week he was on USA Today and the Jimmy Fallon show. So he's just this past week he has really been out there. So. But nobody has their hand up, so if someone presses one, you're first in line with no wait. If you have a question about the Aramaic for Dale Hoffman, and our calling number is 646-200-4169, and press 1.
Wow, Jeannie's a real pro at this now. Wow.
For sure. So, Dale, are you still in Lansing?
Well, I'm in, we left Lansing this morning. I'm on, like, on the edge of Chicago right now. I'm in a Walmart parking lot, great place to be. I've got my daughter Lucinda with me, who I picked up in Indiana at my brother-in-law's house. And we're going to just, spend a little time in Chicago for a couple hours and then head out to Oswego. I've got primal voice toning tonight, which is, we do a little bit of Aramaic toning, but it's more of an expressive toning rather than toning words so much. What we're actually doing is kind of using breath work to tune into the energy system, into the temple, into the body temple, and almost like you could say unlocking or unfolding sound from that to actually be able to express, to help express the different energies that are in the temple. And then tomorrow I've got a full day, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's called Pray in My Shem, the Aramaic Prayer of Yeshua, where I'm going to do the most, I've done it a few times before. We're recording this one, though. It's going to be a full-on, all-day gathering focused on the Lord's Prayer, going line by line and looking at some of the particular words and talking about how some of the lines were actually added later, talking about some of the more Gnostic or experiential or mystical aspects of it that were completely lost, talking about some of the mistranslations. I'm really excited about that because it's something I've wanted to get recorded for a long time. I've got a program about how to speak the Lord's Prayer, and I've got one with Dr. Albert Wachance, but I really wanted one that was more comprehensive where I could just kind of completely be open and not feel rushed in any way to get through the material, but to be able to have enough time to really be able to look at it from all the possible angles and nuances. It's going to be a really exciting day. Well, tonight will be great tomorrow, and then we've got Still Point Breathing on Sunday. So, and then back home.
Awesome. Well, our calling number is 646-200-4169. If you've got a question for Dale, a question about the Aramaic, and we would love to hear your sweet voice. And if you are feeling a little hesitant about calling, if Dale and I, Dr. Tim, Jeannie, were on a platform having a conversation, presenting this material, and we walked down off of the platform, what would your question be for us? I know you'd be approaching 1, 2, 3, all of us with questions. And so here's the opportunity to have a direct conversation with Dale L. Hoffman and to get more insight into this ancient understanding, this ancient teaching that just opens such a fabulous space of awakening and awareness and moving beyond the insanity of the culture. So that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to do. And so we invite each of you to push the button. Push one. That'll put a hand up, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. And if you're feeling shy, my voice might be shaky, just take a breath, let it go, and your voice will be absolutely fine, even if it's shaky. And we'd love to hear your question. Beyond that, Dale, yesterday our question, I don't know if by any chance you you got to listen to any of the show. I know you were arriving in Lansing, but in yesterday's show we talked about the true and the false, about the the true experience of being, and how the non-being world has its cheap copy, how the non-being world plays out the insanity, and does it all attempting to use the right words, but always being the shadow of the truth of what's going on. And so, do you have any thoughts in that regard, the true state of being compared to the non-being state that wants to pretend? And Jeannie does tell us we've got a caller, but I'd love to have your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it sort of just wraps around what I was sort of speaking of earlier with the bushel baskets, the veils. Yeshua gave us so many examples of sort of idioms and analogies of speaking of how, you know, it's actually the dichotomy between the non-being, which isn't even actually real, and the being self, the true being state. It's the duality between the two of them was actually the word satana. It was a being divided against itself. And that non-being aspect that judges, criticize, tempts, accuses, that was the word akyokartsa in Aramaic, which was basically that non-being self speaking back, that judgmental ego speaking back and criticizing anything that didn't fit into its specific reality structure. And then there was the other word, which was, you've got Satan, you've got devil, which there's a few words for devil. The main one would have been Shiadain. And Shiadain or Shiada doesn't actually mean devil in the sense that we think of devil. It's interesting how devil in Aramaic, Shiadain, Shiada, what it actually means is a spirit or a spiritual energy or an energy or spirit that's not given an open voice. It's actually cut off and shut down and sort of locked into the system, something that you'd become really aware of in the worksheet process or in still point breathing. And that was those things, as an example, when it said Yeshua, in the original Aramaic, doing Shiadain Apex of Mary Magdalene, that means that what that actually means is he stimulated the movement of her seven energy centers that were not open, that were not freely given a free open voice. And you look at that, it's obviously, that's a symbolic teaching about seven chakras. And, of course, they didn't know what they were taught. They didn't know what they were looking at because they didn't allow the original Gnostic meanings onto the table. That as much as they could, they pushed that stuff off the table. So they had no clue, and they thought that it's casting out of seven demons that somehow come in and somehow possess us. But we got to really remember that there's nothing outside, that non-being self, it's like I think what I was saying earlier, it's the reflection in the mirror, and yet what's observing that reflection is not separate from the reflection, yet that reflection is not what's real. It's that which sees it that's real. And yet when we have that reflection and we don't like what we see and we start to push back and, oh, I don't look pretty enough, or, oh, I don't, you know, I'm not happy enough, or, oh, and there's all these different things, we start to build up the intensity of that reflection and we don't even see the reflection anymore. We're just literally just coding our own internal dynamics into what we're observing, not only in our own reflection, but with everyone around us. And that was the key in love anyone you think of, including yourself, as the breath of your life, as your naksha, your nafesh, because that's the key. That's where we go unconscious, is by not breathing. I was actually just before the show listening to your introduction to Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, the recording that I had, worked on a few years ago. And it's awesome when I sort of get back and on the road and I get to listen to some of your stuff for a while and kind of, it doesn't matter how many times I've heard it. I could have heard it 30 times, and every single time I'm going to get something new and some more open nuance. And it's because I'm just opening and pulling more bushel baskets away, so that the more bushel baskets that you remove, the greater your light is, the higher the vibration, whatever the metaphor you want to use is. And then I'm able to see and hear and comprehend the things that when I was coming from that non-being aspect more and more and more in my past, the more I open up to that, to the presence of the moment, the more I'm able to hear. Whereas I could have listened to this particular recording 25 years ago, and I would have had no idea what you were talking about. And that's the key that I'm telling people. This isn't about, you know, as an example, going to Y again and listening and trying to understand everything for 3 hours and then walking out and saying, well, I'll take the worksheet with me. I'll do it later. It's about actually doing it. It's about actually stepping into it and using the tools. And it's about actually living this and coming from the experiential level and moving beyond the conceptual, because you can't get there from the conceptual. You've got to come from the being aspects, the non-being part. It's only going to be able to comprehend so much. Like in the Gospel of John, the darkness could not comprehend, overtake, or master the light. It can't, because the darkness isn't actually what's real. It's the light that's real. So the more we expand, the more of us are waking up, the more of the corks popping up on the lake is one of the analogies I love to use. And I listen to the same thing. Here it is, I've heard that recording I don't know how many times, and I heard things today that I hadn't heard before, even though I had heard them before. So there you go. It's beautiful.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's so powerful to hear Yeshua talking about those who having eyes do not perceive and those who having ears do not hear. You've got to have the content in brain cells. And, of course, each time somebody listens, they build another set of brain cells. And all of a sudden, up pops a meaning that wasn't there yesterday. And, you know, when you listen to that idea of the seven demons being released, in essence, what's being spoken of is the dissociated mind. And, you know, it's really a perfect description of what we call a worksheet that somebody does on the Hydra effect, that they open an issue and all of a sudden they see there are branches of that. There are things that underpin it, things that flow from it that they had no clue about. And so as you open those dissociated parts of the mind, and if you watch somebody when the dissociated part of the mind is triggered into activity, it looks like they're possessed by a demon. I mean, you watch people and they just go just plumb stark raving insane. And, of course, if we look around in our culture, we see the effects of that all over the place. They are demons, and they're packets of mind energy based in hostility or fear that people have no idea how to face and how to forgive, how to open and let go of. And they've been building up on the planet for so long because the tool for removing them was disappeared almost 2,000 years ago. And so as we reopen those things, yeah, things can look pretty crazy when that, you know, alternate personality, you know, one of the demons that we could speak of there, you know, we go into the codependence to interdependence work and we introduce the idea of the power person. And the power person, when the stress is up and the chips are down, what people will automatically turn to, if they haven't resolved their power person issues, is the behavior that they hated most that their power person did to them. And if you ask the average person when their power person was in that behavior, they'd say, yeah, they were like they were possessed by a demon. And here I am, I've sworn I'm never going to be like that, and I'm never going to do it, and they're possessed by it. They're literally taken over by those energetic patterns, those alternate personalities. And Dr. Tim and I, the last couple of weeks, have been talking about how virtually every person who was brought up in a home with a power person, and that is somebody who wasn't functioning as love, literally is a multiple personality that they shift into these alternative ways of thinking and feeling and expressing that are so foreign to their natural and true nature that they're literally possessed by them. And, you know, that's what was really being dealt with. But, you know, in order to deal with that, everybody has to deal with that. And when you lose the awareness of how to deal with that, you lose the awareness of how to create a space for doing that, which is what the work is all about, then what happens is people just do their best to get away from it and pretend it never happened, pretend it was never there. So it's powerful to start to open those spaces in ourselves and to create a safe space with each other to do that and move it all to the next level. And Jeannie tells me that we've got two callers. Let's check in with our callers and say hello.
Okay, the first one's area code 406. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. You know, it's just Lisa from Hawaii, and I when Michael reached out, and I hadn't spoken to you folks in so long except for last weekend, I just figured I would just throw my voice in and say hello. And
welcome.
I've actually stopped being available for myself in the mirror. I can't look at myself in the mirror, and I've stopped looking at people in the eyes that I'm dealing with. So I find that really interesting how I'm withdrawing. So anyway, that's all I have to say.
Well, I'd support you doing some worksheets around that one, Lisa, and letting go of it and be able to look yourself right square in the eye and see your beauty and express it fully in the world.
Yeah, it's I can feel myself withdrawing, and of course that unfolds in so many other ways. The willingness to be available for myself and for other people, and just it's exponential.
So in the context of our conversation, then you might want to ask yourself the question: what demon is coming up in me? What dissociated part of my mind is coming forward for me to heal, and then step into the willingness to heal through it rather than cower in its presence, because all it is a packet of mind energy from the past that has no power, that has no substance, and has no meaning except to give you the opportunity to learn the next piece of work you need to do.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you. Blessings.
Thank you. Ahui ho.
Okay. All right. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Okay. Our next caller is 618. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Gail. I'm from South Central Illinois.
Welcome.
welcome. Thank you. I started listening to your show about a week ago. I started reading your book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, about a month ago. I have attended two of Dale Allen Hoffman's retreats in North Carolina. And so anyway, that is a little bit of my background. My question, I actually have two, is based on some of the things that were said last week, this past week. I was just wondering what Yeshua meant when he said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. If that is translated into Aramaic, and if that means something other than what we traditionally think it means now.
It means exactly what it sounds like. I remove the root of the illusions or that non-being aspect for them. That's an act of, that's like ultimate empathy and compassion, to be able to, you know, be in that experience of such, and hello, by the way, Gail, to be in that intense suffering like that, and still to be able to realize that the perpetrator, so to speak, that we would call, that we can still be in the open space of realizing that it's not their true self that's doing that. It's not really their love. It's not that being mind. It's that false mask, the false face, the ape, the veil that's over top. And, you know, that it says exactly, pretty much exactly that in Aramaic, except that forgive means to cancel or remove that root that's causing the behavior in the first place. And that's a pretty big act of empathy and presence and realization, and being able to be sort of on the receiving end, you know, in this worldly aspect of on that kind of, with that kind of suffering, and yet being able to have that compassion and empathy to look at the other person, to love them as yourself, and to realize that that if I find fault, some kind of intensity of fault in them, that he knew in that moment that it would just put a new bushel basket into his own consciousness, so into his, cover it right up of his own being. But I'm sure Michael can say a lot more about that as well, too.
Yeah, I think we could add another layer to it, Dale, and recognize that Yeshua has set up a scenario and agreed to participate in a scenario which he could not have pulled off by himself. You'll notice how he speaks to the disciples about truth and about eternal life, and they can't hear him. And so it's like, okay, well, let's set up a demonstration. You and you, I need your help. You're going to have to play a part in this in order for the principle to be taught. And so what I hear him doing there is, as well, is, okay, Father, I've asked these people to come and play a role in this scenario, and what I'm asking you to do now is to, you know, they came to this with the potential for these types of behaviors, and so played them out with me. And now what I'm asking you to do is, as you say, to remove the root of those things from them. Let them free of this unconscious or dissociated or demonic behavior, to remove those energetic patterns that never belonged in them. And by the way, guys, thanks for coming and helping do this demonstration. You know, there's a great scene, if you get a chance to see it, there's a play called Cotton Patch Gospel, and it takes place in South Georgia, and Pontius Pilate is the governor of Georgia, and it's modern time, and they go through the whole thing, and after the crucifixion, Yeshua steps out in front of the disciples and kind of does a twirl and says, look, it works! It's a demonstration. It's about, here's how the real thing works. Let me show you the power of the active presence of love to restructure everything. Behold, I make all things new. And by the way, all you guys who help, you get a bonus. We're going to open a space to let that insanity free from you, and I'll support you in it.
Beautiful.
And Gail, you had a second question?
I do. I was reading on the chat yesterday, and somebody was talking about their father and not really being able to forgive them or him. And I saw a comment that said, when you hold a certain space for, like, I guess boundaries was the word that was being used, it divides the heart from the mind, or it makes the heart and the mind go against each other. Could you explain how that works, or what that is?
Well, my take, first of all, would be that if someone has a challenge with father, mother, anyone, please don't ever forgive them. Don't ever think that you can forgive them, because you can't. Forgiveness has got nothing to do with the Greek idea of letting them off the hook for the terrible things that they've done. And, of course, there are people who have done terrible things. But it's not about letting them off the hook and calling that forgiveness. That's the act of pardoning, and should one choose to pardon, great, then pardon. But the forgiveness work is the work of going inside myself. If, as a result of my interaction with my father, I've taken on and bought into a lot of pain and trauma, I would apply forgiveness to my pain and trauma and remove that which divides me against my true self, the true being that I am as love. And so if I hold hostility or fear, then I am a house divided against myself. When a situation comes along that triggers that fear, hostility into activity, then I'm one of those dissociated states of mind comes forward, and it takes over my behavior, and I'm not functioning as the true human being, love, that I am. And so that would be my take on that one. And we're down to just about a minute. Dale, do you have a thought or two?
No, I think that's beautiful. I mean, just everything that you – it's just a beautiful, elegant way to sort of bring it to a close, I think.
All right, well, we're down to the last minute. So, Gail, thank you for your call. I hope we'll hear from you more
thank
often,
you.
Especially as you're reading the book and have more questions for us. And, Dale, absolutely. You're in Oswego when?
Illinois, yeah, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, yeah.
And where is that?
It's about, I'm not sure, a chunk, about maybe an hour and 20 minutes outside of Chicago, southwest of Chicago.
I mean, are you at a Unity Center, or?
No, it's called the Intuitive Angel, actually. If someone goes on DaleAllenHoffman.com, my website, all the information's on there, on the calendar and everything. It's called the Intuitive Angel. It's
awesome.
In this little
so
healing
you're
center.
In the Oswego area. Join Dale for the next three nights, and we appreciate you joining us today, and we ask you to bring a stranger with you to the show on Monday. In the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessing. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.